Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome back to the latest Head of the Pack, coming to you, I am at least, from the Lambeau Field press box at 1:48 a.m. Central Time. Bill went home because he forgot his charger during the game, so he was having kind of a kerfuffle with computers, so he's back on a comfy couch. I'm in the coach's press box, where the Packers offense is getting it figured out, Bill. Getting it figured out. Good God, I can't speak. Packers 45, Bears 30. That first half was something else. The Packers did not play well in the first quarter. Didn't play well on special teams at all throughout the game. Defense played really well in the second half. Offense figured it out. The Packers give us something new to write about each game. This game was extremely interesting. Where do you want to start? Let's go good to bad. Let's start with the offense figuring it out, especially after the first quarter, moving Devontae Adams into the slot, getting the running game going. And Aaron Rodgers, he's nipping on Tom Brady's tail for that MVP, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bizarre game. You called it drunk at one point in the press box. It seems like an appropriate estimation. I mean, my God, the Packers did everything possible to give away the game. And there's Aaron Rodgers with his typical four touchdowns versus no interceptions against the Bears. I mean, my goodness. You'd think the Bears have been pissed off at the quarterback, and maybe they were. It makes no difference. He's behind. He's starting offensive line that's down to one starter, and that is a rookie. He's down Randall Cobb. He's down Robert Tonyan. It makes no damn difference at all, Matt. He threw eight incompletions and four touchdowns tonight.
And he said after the game, regarding the toe, he said he did have a setback. He said it hurt a lot more than it has in past weeks. They're going to take a closer look at it Monday morning. But he said he doesn't know where the setback was exactly, but he had a setback. Still doesn't want surgery, but that'll be something to keep an eye on in the near future. The offensive line, I mean, Billy Turner's injury does not look good. It was one of his knees, correct?
Yeah, it looked like he went down with his left knee, and I watched it a couple times, you know, kind of live before the next play happened. And I'm not sure if he got hurt in the pileup, because I know Floyd came crashing in on Nijman, and they kind of went down in the heap next to him, or if he just went down before that. I couldn't tell, but yeah, he was immediately going for his left knee. He walked off on his own, which just shows that he's a tough SOB, I think. I don't think It was a matter of him being healthy. It's like he's tough. It's like, get the bleep away from me, to the trainers.
And then he slammed his helmet down, kind of went aggressively into the blue medical tent, and was quickly ruled out with a knee injury. And anytime that happens, it's not a good sign. I mean, Robert Tonyan didn't even have a limp when he walked to the locker room in Arizona earlier this year. And he's out for the season with a torn ACL. So I'm not going to assume anything, but and Matt LaFleur did not have an update after the game for us. But if Turner is out for an extended period of time, like you said, Royce Newman, who wasn't even a starter at the beginning of camp, is the only preferred starter on that offensive line. Instead of David Bakhtiari, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Royce Newman, and Billy Turner, it's Yosh Nijman, John Runyon Jr., who should be a starter regardless, Lucas Patrick, Royce Newman, and now Dennis Kelly, who has barely played this season. Started all 16 games for the Titans last year, was a camp signing for depth at tackle. Aaron Rodgers calls him the big David Bakhtiari, because they kind of look alike and Kelly's a couple inches taller. But, you know, LaFleur knows him from his time in Tennessee. He played 11 games while LaFleur was the offensive coordinator there in 2018. He knows what he's doing in this league. LaFleur said he did kind of had to adjust his play calling just to get Kelly in the rhythm of the offense when he went in right away. But listen, if these next men up have really stepped up, and I think Turner's played well this season, I don't see any reason why Dennis Kelly can't, if he can get his feet under him. If the Packers have already weathered the storm of all the injuries they've had, And if they can get Bakhtiari back in the next couple weeks, you know, yes, it's a step down from Turner, but Adam Stenovich and co have, you know, made miracles happen on that offensive line. I don't see why they can't do it again.
Yeah, Kelly's a good player. You mentioned him. He's got a lot of starts under his belt. He's 31, almost 32. So it's not like he's over the hill. It's not like he was Rick Wagner last year, Matt, where,
right.
I mean, Rick, no offense. I mean, no offense to Rick. I mean, he was just beaten up and beaten down by the end of the season. So you got a guy who's played a lot of good football, played in a lot of big games. He's fresh. You could do a lot worse than Bakhtiari if he could ever get back. And Dennis Kelly, I know Rodgers is hyped Billy Turner a lot. You've mentioned the stats in the press box about how he's one of the top 10 in pass block win rate and run block win rate, I believe you said.
Yeah, all I saw was I like those ESPN analytics charts of pass block win rate and run block win rate, and Billy Turner was high up in the top right quadrant among right tackles, and you know, according to that graph, he's a top 5 right tackle in the league this year by those metrics. Obviously, there are different ways to evaluate guys, but Rodgers, yeah, like you said, has professed his Pro Bowl candidacy for Turner's, that is. It's going to be tough, but Packers have weathered a lot of storms this year, and they can weather this one. I want to switch the focus to the line on the other side of the ball. I thought this was I think Next Gen Stats puts out some fascinating numbers after the game, and this was one of the ones that caught my eye. There is one team in the NFL, one, who has pressured opposing quarterbacks more than 35% of the time since week 10, so over the last month, and it's the Green Bay Packers. Over 39%, they've been pressuring opposing quarterbacks at that clip over the past month. I know it's only 3 games, but it's still pretty impressive, especially for a unit that hasn't had Za'Darius Smith all season, lost Whitney Mercilus. You know, last year, what did they get from Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, and Kingsley Keke last year? Nothing, really.
Nothing.
In terms of a pass rush. And this year, Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary are playing out of their mind. Kingsley Keke tied Smith for 6 pressures tonight. Clark's been dominant all season. Dean Lowry's been playing really well this year. I mean, it's been really incredible. And Justin Fields, he can run. He did really well under pressure tonight, but getting pressure on the quarterback and letting him out of the pocket, letting a guy like that out of the pocket, Justin Fields is in every player, is better than not getting pressure at all and just giving him all day to throw back there. So, you know, I think it's been a really nice job by Mike Smith and Jerry Montgomery, the OLB's coach and the DL coach, to get the most out of those guys up front. And when paired with a secondary that's been playing well, They work together well in concert in that second half, allowing only 3 points. I think that's a great recipe heading down the home stretch.
Yeah, I was looking at Pro Football Focus over the bye. So Rashawn Gary already has more pressures this year than he did all last year. Preston Smith, more pressures than all of last year. Kenny Clark, more pressures than all of last year. Dean Lowry, more pressures than all of last year. I guess I didn't look up Keke, but Keke was a beast tonight.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy who's supposed to be this like this quick guy, he's got one hell of a bull rush. I mean, he's just trucking those guards right into Justin Fields' lap the whole game. And I mean, we talked about this back in August. He's the key to the whole thing because you knew what Clark's going to be. You knew what Za'Darius was. You knew what Gary could do. Keke was like that one guy where you thought, well, there's the upside. If this defense is going to get better, it's because Kiki's going to take that next step. He didn't do it for the first 2 months. But he's been on a roll lately. I thought he was really good tonight.
Yeah, since he came back from his concussion. And something that stood out to me just watching the game live was they weren't, you know, swim moving or chopping around their guys and getting, you know, clean runs at Justin Fields. It was, they were pushing their guys all the way back into him, and the pocket was collapsing that way. And yes, Fields did escape, but, you know, one game after Gary forces a fumble on Stafford and Smith and Preston Smith recovers deep in Rams territory, Preston Smith forces a fumble on Fields and Gary recovers deep in Bears territory. So even when without Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary are one heck of a pass rushing duo. It's when those guys need rest. There was at one point tonight where we looked at each other and we're like, Jonathan Garvin and Tipa Naalai are the 2 pass rushers and the Bears are in the red zone right now. Like, getting Za'Darius Smith back is going to be important, assuming that's what happens, because that'll give them more depth at the position. I don't expect him to be one of the top two pass rushers when he first gets back. But yeah, they're in good shape up there. And Mike Smith deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. Rasul Douglas, another pick six. I mean, we've talked at length about his story. I thought Eric Stokes played well tonight. The two plays the Packers got burned on were, you know, the crosser to Demir Byrd when Henry Black, Henry Black, Byrd came out of the backfield and beat Black across the middle. And then Jakeem Grant just kind of zoomed up the sideline. So it wasn't anything deep they got beat on, or really, you know, with the linebackers, or couldn't get pressure. And they fixed it after a nice Preston Smith talking to at halftime.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that. And that's where it sucks that we can't go in a locker room anymore, where you could have kind of pulled guys up, you know, what happened, and they'd be more free to talk. But that must have been something. I know basically everybody talked about it post-game tonight, that Preston, you know, people wanted to get rid of Preston Smith. Remember that, Matt?
Bill, I remember, and we've touched on this before, but it seemed this offseason that Preston Smith was long gone, and Za'Darius Smith was the guy that's here to stay. Now it's the opposite.
Right.
You know, Preston Smith took a pay cut and bet on himself. A lot of incentives in that contract, and he's delivered. Tonight, it was pointed out to him that he earned a $500,000 bonus, and he goes, "That's it? I thought it was going to be a bigger number than that." Side note, he's the most improved interview by far on this team.
Yes.
He's been great. He was great again today after the game at the podium. And it's one of those instances where, you know, coming off last season where he came in overweight, wasn't productive last year, he's back to that 2019 Preston Smith, and he's playing really well, and he's a huge reason this defense is a top five defense in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. In that, remember that narrative where he was playing too much coverage last year, which is just...
Well, that's not true.
The numbers don't support that whatsoever.
Right.
But he's stepped up big time. He's earning his payday, and you're right. It's hard to believe that he's not going to be here next year. The way he's produced, but the reverence that Rodgers talks about with him, about him being stepping up as a leader and being their pregame and halftime guy and his friendship. Again, I don't know if Rodgers will be here next year, but... I think the way Rodgers talks about it, I would assume that feeling was felt by everybody else. And with Za'Darius in the back, I mean, who the hell knows? Can you count on him to be back ever?
Who knows? Yeah,
I'm guessing he'll give it a go, but I think anybody who's of my age, Matt, maybe not your age, knows how backs can be, so who knows? But
Bill.
Yeah, Preston's playing himself. Yeah, you've had back problems. You've talked about it before.
Speak for yourself. My mattress isn't great. And I have heartburn right now because I housed one of those bratwursts and that, flavored mustard. I don't know exactly what's in it, but that mustard at halftime and those chips and buffalo chicken dip. Oh, man, I am feeling it. Right when I get off this podcast, I got to just go home and drink water and flush my system somehow because I do not feel great right now. But I'm doing
Did you let the... Did you let the brat sit on the counter? Sit on the, it's not a desk. What, a counter? Where do we work at?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's a good question. I don't know what it's called. But did you let it sit there for an hour and a half before you consumed it?
No, not this time.
Like the previous home game.
There were no forks, so I just had to eat it with my hand. speaking of things that are disgusting, Packers special teams.
There's a segue.
Holy hell.
Jesus.
I have the list right here. Let's list.
Do we have time? We only have an hour on the Zoom. That's all they give us.
We might not. All right.
Might have to take the Cliffs notes here.
97-yard punt return touchdown allowed when they had the guy dead in his tracks at the 5-yard line. 34-yard punt return allowed. 42-yard kick return allowed. 40-yard kick return allowed. A kickoff out of bounds. Muffing a kickoff that was headed out of bounds to give your offense a start at its own 5-yard line. Your punter shanking a ball 22 yards out of bounds with half of the field to work with. Amari Rodgers muffing a punt off his face, which was bailed out by a Bears player running out of bounds on his own. Marquez Valdes-Scantling muffing an onside kick recovery that was recovered by the Bears and returned for a touchdown, but they also got bailed out by another rule where the ball is dead right when the Bears recover it, I guess. These are some stupid rules. But Packers special teams are an absolute disaster. They've been really bad all season. I was talking to Pete Doherty, and you've covered this team for a while, so you know this just as well as anybody. He said this is as bad as he can remember it being all around. I mean, there have been missed field goals and muff punts and one or two things pop up here and there. This was all game, most facets, except, you know, extra points and field goals. And Matt LaFleur was like, oh, yeah, that's a bright spot. He did say absolutely not when asked if there is a change at special teams coordinator being contemplated, which I understand. What's a midseason change going to do? But it's horrible. Pathetic. It's already cost them against the Chiefs this year. It's not going to cost them against a team that's as bad as the Bears. But, man, if what happened tonight happens in the playoffs, Packers are going home.
Yeah, they play Baltimore on Sunday, who's, you know, rather renowned for decent special teams, though, right? I mean, yeah. John Harbaugh cut his teeth on a special team. So,
but if Tyler Huntley's their quarterback, Packers are going to win that game.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if the you know, the Bears special teams is not good, I just think, you know, the Ravens got to be like drooling right now. I thought the coverage units had been getting better. I thought kickoff coverage had been pretty decent.
It had been very good, yeah.
So it's like all these things that they were building on, and all we talk about with Drayton is field goal. Shit, the whole thing went to pot tonight. They did nothing right other than they made 7 extra points in a 20-yard field goal, which you could have made that one.
I probably could have.
Yeah, that is, you know, the NFC Championship game against Seattle, there was the fake field goal for a touchdown. They got the Seahawks back in the game. Then obviously the Brandon Bostic onside kick. So you got those two plays in a humongous game. But yeah, Pete's right. And this is a team that's been semi-routinely 31st, 32nd in Rick Goslin's annual special teams rating. So Packers fans are used to bad special teams. It's like, yeah, whatever, they're bad. I mean, but this is, I agree with Pete. There's literally nothing to hang your hat on. Nothing. The kickoff return stinks. The punt return stinks. The punter's been really good until tonight. I mean, the touchdown, well, the first punt was right down the middle. Everybody knows you can't do that. And the second one was down the middle, too. Now, they should have made the tackle there. Burks got juked, and then St. Brown got blocked inside. But you can't kick the ball down the middle of the field. You got to tackle guys when you got a chance. They had two shots to get Grant down, and they couldn't get him down.
Bill,
yeah,
it
there's
seems
nothing. Nothing good.
When I watch special teams, is it just me, or is Ty Summers always getting pushed right out of the frame of a tackle at a crucial point? He's always down there, but he's always getting pushed right out of the way.
Yeah, he's our special teams leader,
and
too.
And listen, I understand. I'm not trying to make excuses because Packers special teams are horrific, but you know, Randy Ramsey and Will Redmond are two of your best special teamers. They suffer season-ending injuries before the season starts. Matt LaFleur pointed out that they lost EQ St. Brown and Dominique Daphne, who are two of their core special teamers. But, you know, Mo Drayton brought this up this week when I forget exactly. He might have been talking about the lack of success on extra points compared to years past, but I think this point applies in general. With such a cap crunch, especially this past year, teams are forced to use the bottom of their roster on minimum contract guys, young guys, and the Packers are starting a lot of young guys on special teams. Like, sure, you can call Oren Burks a veteran. This is his fourth year in the league. Like, you look at a team like New England, they have Matthew Slater. Like, Baltimore for years had Anthony Levine. Like, these are guys who are special teamers through and through. Packers have guys who don't know what they're doing on special teams. And that's not just a figure of speech. It's literally, they do not know what they're doing. Tonight was really bad. You're right, the coverage has been good lately, but I can only think about I think the Packers are going to win out. Ravens, Browns aren't going to win here on Christmas, I don't think. The Vikings, the Packers probably won't get swept by them this year, then the Lions. If the Packers get a first-round bye and welcome, you know, the Cowboys or the Cardinals or the Buccaneers here in the playoffs, one special teams mistake could cost them the game. There were, I just listed off 10. That's mm-hmm. That's a list that wouldn't be good for an entire season. It's one game, and it was mostly one half.
Yeah. You know, Drayton's point is correct, but it's the way it's always been here, because the Packers have taken the roster-building method of you pay your 8 or 10 star football players, and then you just fill in the blanks with whoever you can get, which is cheap rookie talent. It's the way it's always been, which is why they always stink. It's because you are counting on undrafted free agents. And I don't want to hear about guys getting hurt. Did you hear the Bears guys are getting hurt today? Like every 5 minutes there's an announcement, so-and-so's out. So everybody's hurt. So that, to me, that's just bullshit excuse-making. They're young and they stink. And they're always young and they stink. And you compound that. Look, I think Mo Drayton's a great guy. He's fascinating to talk to. I'm sure he knows what he's doing. But he's young too. So you've got young players and a young coach. I know the 33rd team's a pretty good website, and they got a special teams guy who does his own rankings. And it was about a month ago he pointed that all the good special teams had veteran coordinators and all the bad teams had young ones. So you got young coordinator, young players. Again, I'm sure Drayton has answers. He's no idiot, but this is what they got.
Doesn't look
and,
good.
And the Bears, by the way, acquired Jakeem Grant for a sixth-round draft pick.
Amari Rodgers was a third-round pick, Bill.
Yeah, and he sucked at he returned one kick for a touchdown at Clemson as a sophomore. He was never any good. Again, maybe that wasn't his fault. I'm just looking at the numbers. He was never like this great returner, but he was supposed to be their salvation there. They got
honestly,
the Bears got Grant for a six. He's got six touchdowns and returns in his career. Six.
All right, Bill, here's a fun game. Pick your worst special teams mistake of the night. Mine was not the 97-yard punt return allowed. It was a kickoff clearly heading out of bounds.
Yes.
That Malik Taylor makes a running effort to catch. Even if he catches it, there is no way he is able to stay in bounds. I know the rule that Ty Montgomery used or took advantage of a couple years ago. I believe it was. I wasn't covering the team. But you have to be stepping out of bounds first when you touch the ball.
Right.
Or something like that. Malik Taylor was fully in bounds, I believe, and just like muffed it, and the ball went out of bounds at the 5-yard line. I cannot think of any reason why he did what he did. That was the worst one, in my opinion.
It was. If he catches the ball, Matt, he gets to the 7.
I mean,
so come on, it'd been better than the 5. No, you're right.
I'm trying to think if he was trying to take advantage of that rule, but.
I just think he lost track of his place in the field.
You have to be out of bounds first and then touch it.
Right. So I'm assuming he just thinks that he just misjudges the ball, but that's him. So I got to come up with a runner-up because that was by far the worst. I guess you got to go with the touchdown because they got 6 points out of it.
Yeah.
Or Burks has him. Oof. But he never really even tries to take. He's like frozen. He's like, you know, a frozen pizza. He's just stuck there and then St. Brown gets blocked inside, and you know they had two chances to get him down, and the guy's pretty fast, and they didn't get him down. My God, what a shit show.
Holy hell. All right, it's time for some questions.
I bet there are special teams questions here, Matt. I haven't looked at them.
From at GB Schultze, more of a concern in the postseason, Mason Crosby kicking a game-winning kick or Mason Crosby calling the coin toss? Honestly, if Mason Crosby has to call an overtime coin toss in Arizona or something, I would be concerned if I were the Packers. But game-winning kick. From Brian.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're right. It's the game-winning kick. Now, again, he did make all 7 tonight. They scored, what, 6 touchdowns? Yeah. He made 7 kicks. Had a good pregame. I know Drayton said they had a really good week of practice, again, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's game-winning kick.
I had a good week of reporting, but I didn't do so great tonight. So that doesn't mean jack shit. From at Tundra Walker 00, what does Mo Drayton have to do to get fired? If he sat in Mark Murphy's chair while wearing Lombardi's trench coat and dripped Culver's cheese sauce on it, would he still be employed?
Hmm.
Jesus.
That's a good scenario, listen, Brian.
Here's the thing. The coordinator can be a problem. He's not the only problem. He can be a problem, but how much will a changing coordinator work? I know a bunch of you guys, and rightfully so, have said, what did we expect? We hired an assistant special teams coach from a bad special teams unit. Hired internally. You got to get someone outside. And this goes back to, you know, what was it? Lowballing Rizzi, who went to the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Special teams coordinator. They're not going to make a change in season. That wouldn't, you know, do anything. After the season, maybe. But honestly, it might be more the players. Certainly, Drayton has something to do with it because coaches always deserve blame. But I don't think Mo Drayton is telling the guys to make trying to make running toe-tap grabs on the five-yard line on kickoffs. I don't think Mo Drayton is telling Oren Burks to stand like a deer in headlights when a guy is 2 centimeters in front of you. I don't think Mo Drayton is saying, hey, Amari, let this one bounce off your freaking face and bounce 2 yards in front of you. I don't think he's saying, hey, MVS, put your hands up, but then let it go right through your hands. Like, at some point, the right. players have to make the plays. Yes, mm-hmm. Mo Drayton is at fault for some of this, and it's easy to call for his job. But these are fundamental plays that these guys have to be making.
Perfectly said. I will say that Drayton was an assistant special teams coach in Indianapolis before he came here, and the Colts are really good.
McAfee.
So it's not like his entire training is under Sean Menenga. It was in Indy, and they were a top five unit.
Tom McMahon, he was with McMahon.
I was going to say, I talked to Tom McMahon when they hired him, and he said that they will be a top 10 special teams unit.
Woo-hoo!
With Drayton. Because he
old takes exposed.
Because it was him, and I forget who his other assistant was that year. That other assistant, he got a head job, and they basically fought to get Drayton. Those two coaches fought to get Drayton on their team. So he comes highly recommended for what it's worth. You're right, Matt. Players got to make plays. And LaFleur can't fire the guy.
No.
Because it looks bad on him. You can't hire a special teams coach, Menenga, and say, oh, shit, I screwed that one up. I'll promote Drayton. Oh, shit, you can't just keep firing coaches.
Because then
forever. Nobody
wants to come work for you.
Right. And there's not exactly an experienced assistant on the roster, right? I
mean, right.
Rayna Stewart. I know they always call him Renee. but it's not like he's a 10-year coordinator who just happens to be here, you know? It's not like it's Mike Pettine being the whatever assistant head coach or whatever is in Chicago where you had this old sage sitting there. They don't have that. So you got what you got, and you just got to hope that somehow – hell, I don't even know how you hope in that. You just hope the guys – I mean, you hope guys make plays, right?
Yeah.
You hope you catch a ball and tackle some guys.
From Mark Sieber, any idea why it takes them so long to get to the quick passes on offense? Is it not part of the initial game plan, or is it Rodgers just ignoring the plan and trying to take shots early on? That's a good question. I don't know. We'd have to be in the initial script meeting to know the actual answer to that. Next Gen Stats did have an interesting stat. So Rodgers threw 12 passes in rhythm tonight. They qualify that as between 2.5 and 4 seconds of release time. He went 10 of 12 for 170 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Rodgers and Devontae Adams both said after the game, maybe it was more of a cliche rather than referring to that exact time frame. You know, early in that second quarter is when they really started to get into a rhythm. They established the run. They hit some quick passes to Adams and, moved him to the slot, did some other things. But that quick passing game, especially with this offensive line, has been really effective all season long because Devontae Adams can create separation off the line of scrimmage very quickly and get open very quickly. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon have been good receiving out of the backfield. Rodgers is really good at reading defenses very quickly post-snap and getting rid of the ball. Maybe it's reading a defense out and then kind of settling into a game plan. The Packers haven't started fast really all season. But they put up 45 points tonight. I know 6 of those came from a pick 6, but listen, if they figure it out, they figure it out. I don't think, you know, they have to come out firing with a quick passing game right away. Maybe it's lulling them to sleep, thinking you're going to go for big plays, and then and then going with a quick passing game once the second quarter starts. But whatever they did, it worked tonight.
Yeah, I don't know either. Is Rodgers ignoring the game plan? I don't know. Maybe he's just trying to stretch the field. Or maybe those underneath routes just aren't open to start with, and they adjust and get some different routes that work. Who knows? It's an interesting question. I don't know the answer, and I won't BS one for him.
Mm-hmm. From Steve Dunkel, is there a DB or RB that could return punts, or is there an available free agent? Amari Rodgers is not helping back there much. Yeah, Amari Rodgers is really bad at returning punts. He had one nice one where he kind of caught a low one that was rotating weirdly, took it up the sideline. That was a nice return, but, you know, that's an average return for anyone else. It's just we've come to expect so little of him. It was funny. After the game, Devontae Adams was asked if he could return punts, and he goes, I certainly hope I don't have to, but I could if I needed to. And I think he was being serious about this. He said at practice, sometimes he jokingly tries to go out in there and return punts, and Brian Gutekunst waves him off the field and says, get the hell off the field. No, you can't have your best receiver return punts. Unless you just want him to fair catch everything, and even then you risk someone running into him. If you just want the best hands out there, you put Devontae Adams, but you're not going to do that because you're not idiot coaches. You're the coaches of the Packers who are 10-3. I mean, maybe some of them are idiots, but I don't think they are. I would not keep putting Amari Rodgers back there. He has given you no reason to trust him. Randall Cobb would be the second option, but he just had core muscle surgery.
Yeah, who else is there, though, Matt?
I'm trying to think. That's why I just paused. You know, during warm-ups, Channon Sullivan returns punts. I know Jaire Alexander has in the past, but...
He was awful.
You don't want to put him back there with that shoulder. Man, I don't know. It's really not good. I am not... kidding, Bill. Well, maybe I am a little bit, but I'm starting to get more and more serious. 11 guys on the line, go all out to try and block it, don't put anyone back there, and just let it bounce. Aaron Rodgers has shown he can lead a touchdown drive from anywhere on the field. You would rather do that than risk a muff with how often the Packers have done it this year. Am I wrong? Am I crazy for saying that?
Maybe a little bit, because you're gonna get 80 yard punts to the 1 yard line.
Yeah, that's
but I see your point though, man. I don't know. As you were talking, I'm going through the roster in my head. I've got no clue. I mean, I'm not sure if Sullivan's ever actually done it.
No, I don't trust Channon Sullivan.
So shit, maybe there's someone in free agency, some veteran who, I don't know.
What's Tyler Irvin up to these days?
Yeah, or Tremont Williams. Can you want to bring Tremont out? I mean, Tremont field of punts here forever.
Oh, my God. He's coaching his son's football teams, Bill. Let him retire in peace.
Oh, fine. Kenny Clark. Ben Braden. I don't know.
Lucas Patrick did say to us, was bragging to us that he has returned two punts in his career, and he caught both of them. Two kickoffs.
Yep.
He said he has the best hands of the O-lineman. Put him back there. Who cares? Just get someone who can catch the damn ball.
That was also something back when McCarthy put him back.
Why was Lucas Patrick on the goddamn kickoff return team?
Because they put two big guys. You know, they put the returner, you know, at the goal line. They'd have two big guys at around the 10-yard line or so just to go block people. Well, what did opponents figure out? That's an offensive lineman. Let's kick him the ball. So they kicked him the ball, and mostly field of them.
Yeah.
Mostly.
From Mike at _SSYYLLVV_ colon period. That's an unnecessary.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's an unnecessary Twitter handle. Will Rodgers win MVP? I think Brady's the front runner right now. A couple weeks ago, it was Brady, Josh Allen, and Rodgers as the three favorites on BetMGM in that order. Since then, Josh Allen has had that game on Monday night in the wind. I don't think you can judge too much of that. And then they lost to the Bucks today. I think Brady is the prohibitive favorite, and Rodgers is a not too distant second right now. Maybe Justin Herbert pulling up the rear at number three. What do we got for live odds, Bill? I know you're looking at that right now.
I am. Oh, shit. But MGM won't let me look because I'm not. We live in a state where they don't let you do that. How rude. I'll look. I will say, though, that he has no chance to win MVP because it is a media-voted award, and I think there's probably too many media people who do not like Aaron Rodgers presently.
If they all voted unbiasedly, does he have a chance?
Yeah. Live odds at FanDuel, Brady minus 150, Rodgers plus 600. He is second.
Okay.
So it is Brady by a mile, and look, he should. Because they're, well, I shouldn't say he should.
Most valuable.
Look what Rodgers has done, my God. He's playing behind me and you in the offensive line presently.
Listen, I don't know. I don't have a vote for MVP. You don't have a vote for MVP. But I don't know how much the voters take into account their surroundings, meaning the quarterback surroundings, or just what analytics or numbers or advanced stats they take into account. Aaron Rodgers has, I believe he had 23 touchdowns. I need to look this up because I didn't have this number ready. Point being, I won't waste your time with this. He has a hell of a lot of touchdowns and no interceptions pretty much since week one.
I want to say it's 27-2 since week one.
Yes, you're right, because I was going to say it was 23-2 since week one. 27-2. Kirk Cousins threw two interceptions on Thursday, so Rodgers has the fewest. I believe tied with Russell Wilson of any starter. And even if you want to look at what the Packers did without him in Kansas City, that could boost his case for most valuable if you really want to get technical. What he's done with his offensive line. He went into Arizona and helped beat the Cardinals without his top three receivers and his top tight end for the fourth quarter. You know, I think Brady will win it if they both continue on their current paths, but I don't think he's out of the mix by any means.
Yeah, you know, if they stumble once or twice, right? Talking about Tampa, Green Bay runs a table and gets the one seed.
Yeah.
That'll be fascinating.
Yep.
Because you're right. Who's overcome more? I don't know Tampa's injury situation, but I know heading into this week, Green Bay was second in injury impact over at mangamesloss.com. Baltimore had passed them up. So, yeah, they've been hammering. They keep rolling along.
From Joe O'Keefe, the O-line includes many who aren't supposed to be starting. However, those guys are playing very well. I would agree. Would you rather have Green Bay's backup O-line or the Jags or Texans starting lines? I would rather have me, you, Joe O'Keefe, Bill Huber, Rob Domofsky, and Jason Wilde than the Jaguars or Texans starting offensive lines. So there's my answer to that one. Yeah, I think Yash, there was one coverage sack early, then Yash got beat on the second one, I believe. He's had his rough patches. He's not great. Obviously, he's going to the bench when David Bakhtiari, if David Bakhtiari comes back. I think John Runyon Jr. is a good player. Lucas Patrick is rock solid. Royce Newman, it seems, has gotten better the last couple of weeks since Adam Stenovich. You know, Adam Stenovich shoots it straight. He said Royce Newman's been inconsistent a couple weeks ago. I think he's been better. Billy Turner, obviously, has been good. We'll see if Dennis Kelly can step in and be that next man up. It's what they're going to have to do. Will it cost them in the NFC Championship game like it did last year? We'll see. But the Packers have weathered the storm of losing a lot of guys on the O-line against really good defensive lines much better this year than they have in years past.
He mentioned Jacksonville. This is nothing to do with the question, but how about Urban Meyer calling his assistant coaches losers?
Jesus Christ.
My God.
Holy hell.
How could anybody ever hire that guy ever again? But someone will hire him and he'll get... My goodness. Anyway,
stinks.
What else we got?
From Cecilia, what will the nickel and dime DBs look like when Jair is back? Can't take Douglas or Stokes off. Does Sullivan become the dime for Black? You know, I thought it was interesting, Bill, because I believe... I forget exactly which game it was. But the first game Kevin King came back from that shoulder injury, he and Douglas split time. And King played more than Douglas, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Tonight, Rasul Douglas, whole game. Mm-hmm. Kevin King played special teams tonight. The coaching staff has come to their senses and said Rasul Douglas is better than Kevin King. They have finally quit Kevin King, for now at least. I would think the outside guys are, you know, the three corners on the field will be Jair, Douglas, and Stokes. Who's going to play in the slot? I don't know. Does Sullivan become the dime for Henry Black? I would think so, just because he's more experienced. But both Sullivan and Black are prone to those massive back-breaking plays. Sullivan, we saw, got beat for that big Van Jefferson touchdown 2 weeks ago. Henry Black got beat by Bird for that big touchdown today. You know, Raven Green couldn't fill that role. Will Redmond couldn't fill that role. Adrian Amos was put up out of position in that role. Hell, play two inside linebackers. Devondre Campbell and Chris Barnes have been playing really well. Just let them do it instead of putting a safety or a corner at that dime spot.
Yeah, it will be interesting because, you know, Alexander's got that skill set for that
he
spot.
He does, yeah.
But do you want a guy with a bad shoulder or a recovering shoulder playing that? That is like a – you're basically a linebacker a lot of times. Because if they run the ball your way, you are right there. And there's no running and there's no hiding. They're going to run it. And I would think if you're, you know, whoever they play, you know, whoever's first game back is against, I would – they'd run the ball right at him and test his physicality. So, yeah, I don't know. Stokes hasn't – they haven't put Stokes in the slot at all. I'm not sure that Douglas has any experience. Maybe he does. I don't know. Well, that's tough. It's as Matt LaFleur says, it's a good problem to have, though.
Yes.
And I'm higher on Sullivan than you. I realize he does give some big plays, but he's also – he has put up a lot of zeros, you know.
Yeah.
I think he entered this week second in receptions per slot snap. So he's been pretty good, but yeah, he has given some big plays too. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they do.
Probably Sullivan. From at BennyBoy209, if Devontae is 1v1 on the goal line, shouldn't it be considered disrespectful if the scoreboard waits until the play to start to put up 6 points?
Right you are.
Listen, Jalen Johnson, the second-year corner out of Utah, I believe he was the Bears' second-round pick last year,
yep,
did a really nice job on Devontae Adams tonight. I'm going to pull up the stat while you talk about him, but that last touchdown where he kind of just broke his ankles, you know, that was kind of just wearing him down all game. That's a sick move because that's who Devontae Adams is. And yes, I think it should be considered disrespectful. Devontae Adams, here, let me pull up these next-gen stats numbers because there are some really interesting ones for Adams. Jalen Johnson lined up across from Devontae Adams on all 23 of Adams' routes aligned out wide. After Adams aligned wide on all 6 of his routes in the first quarter, the Packers bumped Adams inside to the slot on 49% of his routes the rest of the game. The Packers were able to create better matchups for Devontae Adams by moving him into the slot. Adams caught just 2 of 5 targets for 19 yards when Jalen Johnson was the nearest defender. Adams caught all 8 of his targets versus other defenders for 102 yards. Did a nice job, but they made that adjustment. It's not often you have to scheme Devontae Adams away from one guy, but Johnson did well. Adams got the best of him when it mattered most, but a good matchup, but we saw why Devontae Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL again tonight. And, you know, he joked the other day with us, he wants to get up to 20 touchdowns this year, and he was only at 5. He got 2 tonight. if he gets 2 for the last 4 games, that's 15 touchdowns.
Good math.
I know.
I want to say he was 6th in the league last year in slot receptions. I mean, the guy's amazing. I know Rodgers referenced it in his postgame deal tonight too that they wanted to put him in the slot to get some better matchups. And yeah, anytime you get him the ball on the move, he's just so hard to get down with that first guy. And that deep shot, that deep touchdown.
Ugh.
The corner and the safety just plowed into each other, and he just kind of goes waltzing into the end zone.
You know,
it was like cartoons.
Devontae Adams is obviously really good at the line of scrimmage, but what might not be appreciated enough is how good he is after the catch.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he led the NFL in yards after catch per reception last season, if I'm not mistaken.
It was totally yards after the
total
catch.
Total yards after catch, okay. You know, whether it's a simple cutback to get 5 or 6 extra yards, whether it's what he did today, it's his basketball background, because that crossover and the, you know, deception and getting into open space, that's where it comes from. And Bill, well, it's funny enough, and I want to mention this because we won't talk to our loyal listeners, and this is what we'll close with until after the Ravens game. Keith Williams was the Fresno State wide receivers coach who found Devontae Adams in 2010. Adams was a senior in high school, 1 year of high school football under his belt, and Keith Williams was going to Palo Alto High School in the Bay Area in California to look at another receiver. Didn't even know Devontae Adams existed, but he got there, was told by the head coach, Earl Hansen, to look at Devontae Adams, and he did, liked what he saw, the rest is history. Keith Williams is in his first season coaching in the NFL this year. You know who he's the passing game coordinator for? The Baltimore Ravens.
That's fantastic. And so, Amari Rodgers' dad's at the Ravens, too, so it's family ties week.
And Devontae Adams, when I sat down with him a couple weeks ago, called Keith Williams like a father figure for him. Last year, he would talk with Keith Williams 3 to 4 times a week about everything wide receivers. After the Packers lost to the 49ers in the NFC title game a couple years ago, right after it, he talked to Keith Williams for an hour and a half on the phone about what he needed to do to become the best wide receiver in the NFL. And now, I was joking with Keith when I talked to him for the story a while back, Keith has to face Devontae Adams, this guy who he's helped groom into the guy who he is today. I said, you better tell your DBs what's up. And he was like, I know, I've been joking with him about it. But that'll be really fascinating. Yes, Amari Rodgers' dad is the wide receivers coach for the Ravens. They've got some good wide receivers. It's 2:34 a.m. I know we don't get to all of your guys' questions each week, but I try to spread it out. We appreciate you guys for sending them all in. Appreciate you guys for listening at all. Let us know in any ways we can improve the show, hopefully in the future, whether it's in the playoffs or in the off season. Incorporate a video component, maybe some live shows on YouTube where you guys can comment live, get some guests on. We'll take this thing to the moon. But for Bill, for myself, we can't thank you guys enough for listening. We'll talk to you next week.